Chapter 29. Alone. It's one of those small words that means entirely too much, like fear or trust. I'm used to working alone. It goes with the territory. Wizards at my level of skill and strength, well, my usual levels, are few and far between. Maybe no more than 24 in the United States, with a slightly higher concentration of them in Europe, Africa, and Asia. But there is a difference between working alone and finding yourself facing a hat full of foes on a cold night while wounded, in the dark, and practically helpless. It took me about 10 seconds to become acutely aware of that difference. Fear settled in comfortably. Fear was something I was used to. I was able to think past it, to focus on my predicament. Yay for me. My body reacted the same old way, keying up for fight or flight, while I forced my breathing to stay even. The smart thing to do would be to run, turn around and go back to the van and have Susan drive me the hell away. Granted, I probably couldn't even climb the wall on my own, but I could have tried. But I was already committed. I was here to do battle with the forces of evil, such as they were. I had dropped the challenge to them, not the other way around. Besides, if Tara and the kids were in trouble, I was the only one who could help them. I climbed to my feet, getting out the gun, and moved forward through the woods in a direction that seemed perpendicular to the line of the stone wall behind me. The woods were thick, sycamores and poplars giving way to evergreens with scratchy, low branches. I slipped through them as best I could, moving as quietly as I could manage. I didn't think I made more noise than the wind did, as it rattled the branches and the falling leaves and stirred more droplets of water to fall. In time, maybe 3 or 4 minutes, I came to the edge of the woods and looked out onto Gentleman Johnny Marconi's estate. It was magnificent, something out of a Home and Garden magazine. You could have put a small golf course in Marconi's backyard. A long ways off, at the front of the property, Marconi's huge white house stood serene and flawless, artistically illuminated by dozens of lights, with a veranda or patio larger than a dance floor plotted out at the rear. Behind it, 3 enormous square plots, side by side, contained lit and lovely gardens, terraced down a gently sloping hill toward me. At the hill's base was a pretty little vale, and there was a small pond, which I realized after a moment was an enormous concrete-lined swimming pool lit from beneath the surface. The pool was irregularly shaped, and one corner of the pool stirred near the surface. Steam lay thick over the water. Standing stately sentinel toward the center of the vale was a ring of evergreens, thick and stocky trees that concealed whatever was at their center. 2 rounded hillocks decorated the left side of the vale's landscape, one of them surrounded by what looked like a replica of a small ruined shrine or temple, all cracked marble and fallen columns. The whole place was well lit, both by silver moonlight and by lighting placed at strategic intervals. The lawn was immaculate, and the trees dotted the grounds in a sort of careless perfection that only an army of expensive gardeners could possibly have maintained. And they say the crime doesn't pay. I took a position behind a screen of trees and brush and looked around the grounds with a careful, stealthy caution. I didn't have long to wait. There was a rush of motion from beneath one of the trees on the far side of the estate, and a swift, dark form, a dark-furred wolf, Billy, I thought, flew from beneath one tree toward a patch of dark shadow on the grass, not 20 feet from me. I tensed and started to rise from my hiding place in the brush to call out to the wolf as he ran. A bright red dot of light appeared against the wolf's fur. There was a hollow sound, something I could hardly hear, like a politely covered cough. I saw the wolf jerk, a flash of blue feathered against its fur, and then the beast tumbled into a roll and fell to the ground. It struggled for a moment back to its feet and reached for the dart in its flank and its jaws. Its balance wavered, and the wolf staggered to one side and fell. I saw its chest heaving, and one of its rear legs twitched spasmodically. I thought I could see the beast's eyes, Billy's eyes, focus on me for a moment, and then they glazed over and went vacant. "Nice shot," called a deep, tense voice. In the ring of evergreens, there was a motion, and then Denton appeared, walking out across the grass toward the fallen wolf. His dark, short hair was still immaculately rigid. I couldn't see the veins in his forehead, despite the bright light. It was a subtle change in him, one of several. His tie was loose, his jacket was unbuttoned. He moved with less steel in his backbone, more fire in his belly. There was an animal quality to him, a surety and savagery of purpose that had been uncertain before. And what it meant was a lot more significant than the changes that showed on his exterior. His restraint was gone. Whatever last remnants of doubt or regret that had enabled him to maintain his own self-control and some measure of control over the other Hexenwolfen had vanished in the blood frenzy in the Full Moon garage. It was in every line of him now, in every step, every flicker of his eyes. The man had become a predator. From the evergreens behind him appeared the rest of the Hexenwolfen. Ben, now dressed only in a white dress shirt and a gray business skirt, her legs dark and rippling with muscle in the moonlight. Harris, his ears still sticking out, his freckles, dark spots against pale skin. His manner restless and hungry. And Wilson, still in his wrinkled suit, with his shirt unbuttoned, his pot belly overlapping the belt of dark fur that was around his waist. He stroked and patted it with his fat fingers. His mouth was set in an odd, dangerous grin. Denton moved across the grass to the fallen wolf and nudged it with his toe. Six, he said. Did you count six? Six, Ben confirmed, her voice throaty. Can we have them now? She reached Denton's side and pressed up against him, lifting one leg to rub against his, burying it to the top of her thigh as she did. Not yet, Denton said. He looked around him thoughtfully, and my gaze followed his. Scattered around a circle of perhaps 50 yards diameter were several dark lumps I had taken to be indentations in the ground, shadows cast by the moon and the ground's lighting. I looked again and saw, with a little surge of fearful understanding, that they weren't indentations. They were wolves, my allies. The dark patch Billy had been running for gave a little whimper, and I thought I saw the moon glint off George's tawny coat. I looked around and counted the fallen. Six. I couldn't tell them apart very well. Couldn't tell which of them, if any, was Terra, but I counted six fallen wolves upon the ground. All of them, I thought, with a panic rush of fear. All of them had been taken. Come on, Harris said, his voice tight, strained. Fuck McFinn. He isn't showing up. Let's take them out, all of them, and go find Dresden. We'll get your belt soon enough, kid, Wilson snorted, his fingers stroking the fur belt over his belly. If you hadn't been so stupid as to lose it, Harris snarled, and Denton shook Ben from his side to get between the other two men. Shut up, now. We don't have time for this. Harris, we'll go after the wizard as soon as we can. Wilson, keep your fat mouth shut if you like your tongue where it is, and both of you back off. The men made low, growling noises, and they took steps away from one another. I licked my lips. I was shaking. The gun felt heavy in my hand. There were only the four of them, I thought. They weren't more than 30 feet away. I could start shooting right now. If I got lucky, I could down them all. They were werewolves, but they weren't invincible. I slipped the safety off the pistol and drew a steadying breath. It was a damn fool thing to do, and I knew it. Life is not the movies. It wasn't likely I'd be able to shoot them all before they could draw and shoot back, but I didn't have much choice. Denton turned toward the first hillock with its artfully ruined temple and waved. All right, he called. That's all of them. A pair of shapes appeared from the lights that shone from the temple and then came down the hill toward Denton and the Hexenwolfen. Marconi was dressed in a flannel shirt, jeans, and a hunter's vest, and he wore a gleaming rifle, an enormous scope mounted on it, in one hand. Hendricks, hulking beside him in muscle-bound silence, was dressed in what looked like black military fatigues, bearing the gun I'd seen earlier, a knife, and various other gear. Hendricks' eyes flickered over Denton and his associates warily. I stared at Marconi in shock. It took me a moment to pick my jaw up off the ground and piece together what was going on. Marconi didn't know. He didn't know that Denton and his company were out to get him. He must have blamed the other killings on MacFin and the Alphas. So now Denton had Marconi and the Alphas there. Once MacFin arrived, he would be able to kill everyone he wanted dead, everyone who knew what was going on, and be able to make up any story he damn well pleased. Everyone but me, that is. He did not, as yet, have his hands on me. These are all we saw on the monitors, Marconi corrected. There was a malfunction in camera 6 at the rear line of the property. Mr. Dresden and such malfunctions tend to go hand in hand. Damn it. Are you sure the wizard isn't one of them? Denton demanded. One of the wolves? I think not, Marconi answered. But I suppose anything is possible. Denton scowled. Then he's not here. If he truly offered you a challenge, he's here, Marconi said, his tone completely confident. I'm certain of that. And he just watched his werewolf friends get shot down? Denton asked. Wolves run faster than men, Marconi pointed out. Possibly he hasn't caught up to them yet. He could be watching us even now. You're giving him too much credit, Denton said, but I saw his eyes instinctively shift toward the blackness of the growth of woods. If I stood up, he would be looking right at me. I froze, holding my breath. Am I? Marconi smiled and leaned down to pluck the feathered dart from Billy's furry flank. The tranquilizers likely won't hold these beasts for very long. Decisions need to be made, gentlemen. And if you are to hold to your end of the bargain, you had best get to work producing. I don't know if Marconi noticed Ben's sudden tension, the way she slid her hands over her stomach, but I did. Kill these dogs now, she said in a low, heated voice. It prevents complications later in the evening. Marconi tisked. Short-sighted. Let MacFin tear them to pieces when he arrives, and any medical examiner won't bother to look for the tranquilizers. If one of you does it, it will create awkward questions once forensics takes a look at things. And I thought that was the point of you coming to me with this offer, reducing questions. Ben lifted her lips away from her teeth, and I saw the tips of her breast stiffen beneath her white shirt. I hate slimy scum like you, Marconi, she purred, sliding her hand from her thigh up over her hip and beneath the buttons of her shirt. Marconi's eyes narrowed on her, and as though connected to the crime lord by some telepathic leash, Hendricks made one simple motion, a shift of his forward arm, that chambered a round on the gun with a cold little click-clack. Denton gave Marconi a sharp look and took hold of Ben's wrist with his hand. The woman tensed for a second, resisting him, but then allowed Denton to draw her hand away from the belt that was surely beneath her shirt. Denton released her, and Ben lowered her hands, visibly relaxing. Marconi and Hendricks never so much as blinked or broke a sweat. Fragile situations like this one were evidently second nature to them. I let out a breath I'd been holding for a long time. 6-1, and ready for a fight. If I attacked them now, I didn't have a prayer. If I tried to move, to fade back into the trees, they would be likely to notice me. Damn. Denton glanced at the trees once more, and I held my breath again. Don't worry, Marconi, he said. We'll turn the wizard over to you once we find him, no questions asked. That being the case, Marconi said, I suggest you start looking while I make preparations for Mr. MacFin. Please remember that I want Mr. Dresden alive, if possible. My throat constricted, and if I hadn't been holding my breath, I think it would have let out a little squeak. What in the world would John Marconi want with me after the incident in the parking garage? Nothing good, certainly. Nothing I wanted to think about. Damn. This night was getting spookier all the time. Of course, Mr. Marconi, Denton said, his tone a little too polite. Do you have any suggestions where we would start looking? Marconi ignored the sarcasm, flicked a switch on the side of his rifle, and pointed it negligently at the tree line. Over there ought to do. The red dot of the laser sight settled onto a leaf 6 inches to the left of my head, and the thready pulse of fear in my chest turned into an icy white streak of horror. Damn,